So, my fine friends, welcome back to Destination Discourse. And I'm joined today with the very ticklish Adam Stoker. How are you, sir?
You know what? I just proved that I am, in fact, ticklish.
Did
So
that tickle you? Did it tickle your boxes?
What?
Did it tickle your boxes?
I'm sorry.
Did it tickle your boxes?
Tick all? Is that... I'm trying to understand. Is this a British thing?
Yeah. So last episode, that we just recorded before this, so we were just having a conversation. Adam was asking about this, like a phrase that he said. It sounded like Will said, tickle the boxes, T-I-C-K-L-E. What he was actually saying was tick all the boxes, because in England, instead of check, we say tick, right? A check is a tick in England. So he was ticking all the boxes, not tickling the boxes. So
I was confused about where the episode was going when he said
when
that.
When he was tickling the boxes.
Yeah, thank you for helping me understand this other language. Yeah.
We're nations divided by a common language, you know. There are always humorous nuances like that to crack me
I'm
up.
Gonna start using that though.
You gonna tickle the boxes?
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
All the time.
Well, we don't have a guest today, and this is gonna be a fun episode. I'm hoping it's fun. I literally don't know where the conversation is going because you have all the knowledge on this one.
What else
you
is
being
new?
touche. You've been doing CMO Jam for a while in live format at some conferences where you bring together DMOs, CMOs, or marketing leaders and have candid conversations. And you've published some of those on your LinkedIn. And I've learned a lot from just the radical candor. It's maybe a more intelligent version of the show in a lot of ways, right? Because you got that more brain capital there, like a lot more folks that make a lot more sense than we do. And, but you've been doing that more, and I think it's evolving, and you can talk about that a little bit. But you just had one. You had a virtual CMO jam recently, and we're going to be talking about it. But
yeah,
it's not just the topic. It's also the Stu's
okay.
News.
You caught me off guard because I thought you're trying to weasel out of the jingle here, which I'm
don't
not
weasel. Thank you very
comfortable
much.
With.
I don't weasel.
All right, here we go. I love that you're just so done with this.
Hey, this is so good.
There we go.
Yeah, I just wish the segment died. I'll be honest. I wish we just came on, had a conversation with someone smarter than us, and we went home, and everyone felt good about it. Apparently,
I do want you to know,
and Caleb, and two other desties like the jingle.
No, you are in the minority, my friend. This is the most loved segment in all of Destination Marketing.
Allegedly, so because we say so, it must be right.
Yes.
Anywho, tell us about CMO Jam, man. How was it? Who was there?
Well,
like, what's the deal?
And I think to start, what I have to do is give this show a little bit of credit, because when you talked to me about, I don't know, at this point, it must have been 2.5 years ago, where you said, hey, I'm thinking about doing a show like this. I don't feel like there's enough healthy disagreement and discussion in the industry. And what we really get is a bunch of one-to-many discussion. And while there is benefit from a one-to-many discussion, a many-to-many discussion is so much more valuable. And you talked about how, like, if somebody says something that's bogus on stage at a conference, well, nobody's going to raise their hand and disagree with them. But here on this show, what we do is we say something, and if we disagree with something, we'll immediately call it out and have like the long tail discussion from it. And so that principle was a big factor in leading to this. The way CMO Jam actually started was Scott Peacock from Visit North Carolina sent me a message, and he asked me, when are you going to create the non-conference where we can actually have meaningful discussions that isn't just one to many? And because of the experience that I had on this show, I kind of felt like I understood what format might work. And that's where the first CMO Jam came from. We were able to actually have Diane Charno from your team as one of our panelists at CMO Jam. But we learned a lot at that first one a year ago. We did it at Esto. We had people fly in a day early. We did it all in person, captured all the content.
You did it in person? Is that what you
In
said?
person. Yeah.
In person.
It's the English rendition of that. Yeah, it's the
You
American
tickled each
English.
other in Persian.
We did not. We did not.
Okay.
That did not happen.
Okay.
So we did that, learned a lot, and one of the things that we realized is that it was going to be prohibitively expensive to do that as a recurring theme in a thing in person without some major sponsorship from a vendor or something like that. And so we decided to do it virtually on our own, not require everybody to fly in a day early to an event. And so we basically took everything we learned from the first one and just yesterday recorded CMO Jam with all of the new attendees. It's a year within a couple of weeks from last year's CMO Jam. And the topics have evolved. It's amazing how different the discussion was this time from where it was before. But I'll tell you who our panelists were. So we had Christian Mingle, which, fellow Destie, he's been on the show, from St. Joe's, Missouri. We had Karina Anthony from Atlantic City on. We had Allison Brown from Discover Long Island. We had Josh Albrecht from Visit Milwaukee, Kelly Steele from Visit Putnam County, and Megan Buckbinder from Visit Wilmington, who's just up the street from you in North Carolina. And that group was just dynamite. I mean, the energy from the group was amazing, and we went through a variety of topics. And it was a lot of fun. We did it live. We had over 100 registered attendees. I think about half of them actually showed up and stayed for the entire event. So we were able to do a live Q&A with the audience at the end, which we weren't able to do in the first one, obviously. And it was really fun. And I would love to kind of chat through some of the things that came up in that conversation.
Yeah, I'm really interested in what are the hot topics this year, especially what's changed? Like, what was the big bad last year that wasn't even relevant this year? That's really
Well,
fascinating.
the destination website debate from last year, it carried through into this year a little bit. We talked a lot about relevance, and I guess I'll start there on the relevance side of things because I thought it was really interesting. We got about halfway around the table asking about, how are you communicating relevance to your stakeholders? And there's two sides of relevance, right? Are you relevant to your stakeholders? And through your marketing, are you relevant to the consumer, right? And so we talked about both of those things. And then we got to Christian as we're going around the table. And Christian said, I got a real problem with the word that you're using, relevance. And I was like, well, tell me about that. And he says, well, relevance is essentially the lowest value term that you can use because relevance is essentially do people know we exist or do we matter? He's like, I would rather use a word like significance because significance means we actually have impact on the destination, that they don't just know who we are, they actually understand the value that we bring. And he's like, so everything I'm doing is around understanding significance and proving significance. Relevance is kind of table stakes at this point. And I thought that sparked a real discussion from multiple participants jumping in, and we actually kept correcting ourselves for the rest of CMO Jam. We would start to say relevance, and then we would switch it to significance because I think Christian really changed our mindset with that discussion. So I thought that was kind of a fun
Yeah, I love that. And that's the kind
addition.
of thinking I think we need, right? We can't just settle for status quo and just existing, right? This isn't about how do we protect the DMOs from going extinct. That's not the conversation. It's how do our communities thrive as a result of the work that we do as an organization? Like, that's the conversation. So I like that tweak.
It was really good because I do like I've even said on this show many times the term the illusion of relevance. That gets even stronger if it's the illusion of significance, right? And
Yeah.
so I think we should not settle for relevance. I think we should all be fighting for significance. And I thought that was one of the great takeaways for me from that discussion.
It's quotable for sure.
So
It's great.
that was a really interesting part of the discussion. We talked about AI, and I was really fascinated by the AI discussion because we had about half the room was using different tools. Like half of them were on Claude, half of them were using a lot of the new capabilities in ChatGPT. One person said that they were unfortunately forced to be a Microsoft shop, so they were
Copilot.
using
Oh,
Copilot, and they were
oh.
embarrassed that they were using Copilot, which was kind of funny. But there was a lot of discussion about how they're using AI, and you, I don't know if I even want to belabor that on this discussion because we've talked about AI so much. But I would say we talked recently about the importance of having someone in your organization who can understand AI to the level required to have an organizational AI strategy and implementation process. And I got to say, most people are still in the wild, wild west phase where multiple people in the organization have individual accounts. They're not rolling up to a, you know, joint brain or operating system that they're working off of. And that's a change that I think more and more destinations need to be prepared to make. So
Yeah,
that's one
at a
takeaway.
minimum, right? We've got a governance at a minimum, right? It's a real security and privacy threat if you don't. And I think you're not going to optimize what you can do. Now, you can go to the other extreme where it's governed to the point where you can only use Copilot, which is asinine in my opinion, and that's borderline unethical because you're now taking away a tool and strapping your team's hands behind their backs a little bit. But I do think we've got to do a better job of, before it's too late, of saying, okay, here's some guardrails, here's some preferred tools, here are your options versus just go figure it out, which is how a lot are operating.
I totally agree, and that was kind of, it was very clear in that discussion that we haven't yet reached in each individual organization the level of governance needed for AI to have the value or safety that it should in an
And it's
organization.
no different. You said something a couple of episodes ago about, we need to stop thinking about AI the way they are and start thinking of it more like Google Drive and stuff like that, right? Or Microsoft. You're a Microsoft shop or you're a Google Drive shop, but have people using similar tools in similar ways. But I think it goes beyond the tool. And I think it's actually how do you use it, right? So that's where it's maybe different than using Office and Outlook versus, because we don't dictate, here's how you do email, right? Or here's how you do Word. But I think with this, we might have to at least have standard operating procedures or skills or whatever it is that are Lego blocks that people can choose from based on their specific role within the organization.
And like I said, I don't want to spend a ton of time on AI because I think you and I have talked about it a lot, but that was an interesting segment, and anybody that watches that, I think will find a lot of interesting nuggets there. The segment that surprised, oh,
Can
go
I ask a
ahead.
question real quick before you move on from AI? As a percentage of the conversation this time versus last time, a year ago, like how much was dedicated to AI? I'm assuming a lot of it touched AI, but how AI focused was it a year ago versus now? Just curious.
So we had four full segments, and one of the four segments was entirely dedicated to AI. Last year, I think it was probably more around a third because everything kept coming back to AI last year. And honestly, I think as a moderator, I may have done a better job of staying within the segments this year than I did last year. And last year, I allowed the conversation to probably meander out of the segment more. We also had more time, right? And so I don't know that I want to say that that means that it's a lower discussion point than it was a year ago, but I think there's less confusion about it, and we definitely had a more coherent and I would say intelligent conversation about it this time because so many more people have used it for so much longer.
Well, intelligent is the word you chose. So you're calling the people last year less intelligent than the ones this year? Oh, it's pretty mean, dude.
Thank you for that. That comment really ticks all the boxes
It
for
does.
me.
It does tick all the boxes.
So there was a segment that completely surprised me though, and the conversation that stemmed from it completely surprised me. And this
Were
was
the segments predetermined? Did you already?
predetermined. So segment one was AI, segment two was relevance today versus relevance tomorrow, and segment three was budget planning in a time like this. And as CMOs, right, that's what everybody's dealing with right now is I probably have some sort of compression of my budget if I'm a CMO, and I've got so many different things that I want to do that I'm trying to figure out how to solve. And so as we started it, somebody brought up the agency discussion, and it was amazing to watch how the conversation kind of spiraled from there. And so I'll start with I can't remember who said it first, but one of the participants said, I recently decided that we're not going to have an agency of record anymore, and we're only going to work with like agencies in specific lanes that we feel like we need someone who's gone beyond our team's knowledge with. So they don't want an agency of record that's a one-stop shop that does everything. They want individual agencies that they can go to that they know can solve a specific problem that they have, or a bandwidth restriction that they have on their team. And then another person said, well, I actually recently fired my agency of record as well because I have the same problem. I don't want a one-stop shop. Our team's become more sophisticated. We don't want to use an agency the way we have in the past. And then a third person actually said, you know what? I did the same thing, and we're using different agencies for different things. This was a panel of six people that I did not know had made those decisions. And who knows, like a sampling of six people, but half of them had made that decision on this call. And as they talked through the reasoning, even those that still have an agency of record, so Josh Albrecht, for example, from Visit Milwaukee, still has an agency of record, loves his agency of record, but he talked about the evolving needs that a destination has compared to what an agency offers. And he said, I need a partner that can guide me through things much more than I need somebody who can just do all the little things that I'm capable of bringing in-house today. I'm looking for thinking. I'm looking for strategy. And we kind of, the discussion went a variety of different ways. You can ask me questions, I guess, to decide where to go with that. But it was fascinating to see that like my takeaway was the agency's value proposition to a DMO today is completely different than what it was 5 years ago. And that's very clear in the way these DMOs are making decisions. So for agencies, I think the total addressable market is shrinking if you're an agency of record agency. And I thought that was interesting.
So we did an episode. This was one of your episodes. I forget the actual number, but it was based on that premise that it's time for agencies to get paid for how they think, not what they do, or something like that. Not what they do, how they think, right? And it resonated. It's one of our top 10 episodes of all time still, right? And so I think this is not a new sort of thought. I think we're still trying to shake out, and I think inevitably DMOs are different places on this. I've been in the agency world. I was in the agency world longer than I've been on the client side, right? I was in the agency world for 20 years. I've been at this DMO for a little over 5. And we saw this pendulum swing constantly throughout. And I wasn't just in tourism, we had others, but there's always a pendulum swinging, which is, hey, I'm going to bring the stuff in-house and decouple from agencies, and then I'm going to swing back. I need agencies because it gives me some flexibility and expertise that I don't have. I think what's different this time is the gap between capabilities of a client and an agency has shrunk, right? Because the agency always had this massive advantage, which was, hey, we're going to scale things. We're going to be able to do the same thing for multiple people, learn faster, pay a higher salary for an expert that is capable of more, and we're going to be out of a structure that allows us to sort of spread the load a little bit. And so yes, we were paying a premium. Like I can hire someone from an agency, it's going to cost me more than on an hourly basis than someone at an agency. But the value was there because it was maybe I can't afford a full-time employee to do this job, and I can have a fractional employee through an agency, right? So there was value propositions that are beginning to erode. I wouldn't say they've gone, but I think the capabilities of an individual, entry-level individual today, are that of a senior-level agency employee even 2 years ago, right? So I can bring someone on that's a social media person that's capable of doing calendars, copywriting, creative, scheduling, responding through AI tools at a level they couldn't previously do, and I couldn't get for that same cost. So I think that's certainly one of the pressures. I think the other we're looking at is we've got to just be more efficient with our dollars because there is downward pressure on budget. Everyone's trying to get a piece of the marketing budget. This is again another pendulum that goes in our industry we're going to have to find new arguments, I think. I think the old arguments don't work anymore. And we might be have to go through another era like we did when things like TID started picking up and convincing our community, hey, let's find new ways to fund promotion. But I think we've also, as DMOs, got to stop being so territorial about our individual budget. And we got to start looking at our community's investment in tourism, you know, and that's product development, that's workforce, that's business retention, that's attracting new, you know, product here. So I think our role in our purview has to stop being so selfish in a way, because I think if we just focus on we need more money for promotion, we need more money for promotion, I think we're going to increasingly lose that battle. So I think we've got to raise everyone that's in the ecosystem a little more. So it's sort of these pressures, though, going back to the thesis you sort of put out there, mean ultimately that agencies are going to have to find new ways to drive value for the
Yeah.
DMO. So I'd love to hear from your perspective, being an agency. Like, obviously, we've talked as ad nauseum about paying for what you think versus what you do, but what do you think that future relationship looks like, and how do you continue to drive value?
Well, and this is where the conversation kind of went, because I mean, historically, the way an agency was able to subsidize a lot of the strategy work that went into a client relationship, clients wouldn't pay, like, for example, a big chunk up front for a strategy exercise at the beginning of a campaign. So the media commissions throughout the campaign would subsidize that strategy work, right? And so the agency model and the way it was structured required media spend in order to deliver the value that was needed for any given campaign. The willingness to for clients to pay the volume of media when so much of it can be executed in-house. I mean, Claude can execute on some digital buys for you if you understand how to engineer it correctly. And of course, it still requires a human on the other side, but it can get you a lot farther than it ever could before, right? And so media buys are no longer a part, not no longer a part, but no longer near as important to the business model for agencies as they used to be, which means the way destinations compensate agencies has to change as well. And what I said on the call was, if you want a partner as an agency, then you have to be prepared to pay a premium to have an agency that's a partner. What you can't get anymore is really cheap, media commissions or whatever, and then expect massive strategy expertise and partnership from the agency that you're working with, because you can't have it both ways. And so that was one of the interesting things. But when you talk about what needs to change from the agency side of things, from a service and model perspective, I don't want to sound like I'm taking a victory lap here, but I feel like I saw this a year and a half ago and said, we can't continue to chase agency of record business. We have to change the way we do things. And what we've decided to do, and what we've found a lot of success with, is going to destinations and saying, what problem do you need help solving that you have not yet been able to solve, and that maybe your agency of record hasn't been able to solve? And we've been working on a crazy different, I would say, lane of project than we have ever have before. Because we're built for one destination right now, we're doing a holistic AI strategy and implementation for their organization, helping them build that kind of context at the center that everybody works off of and getting everybody on the same tools. We've got another destination that had us do a LinkedIn strategy for their organization, and that was a fantastic project for us. I'm not going to go through all the different types of projects that we're working on, but what I'll say is, we're providing value because we're being in a very specific lane and providing very specific strategy that they can't solve on their own. And we're not making them pay for a dozen other products that they can actually have in-house. And it's been a really, really valuable pivot for us. And I kind of think that's where it's going.
Yeah, it's interesting. I sort of my mind goes to the consultants in the industry. I'm not a big fan of the word consultant, but I think some of the ones that have been successful and continue to get business, they go with a project mentality, right? A lot of times it's sort of a similar project they've done. They'll scale it, but It's one sort of relationship transaction when they say, hey, we've got this deliverable. Here's all the work that will go into providing this deliverable. Here's the timeline and here's the cost. And so I think that's almost what you're describing what the agency model is going to become. It's going to become more
It has
ad
to.
hoc, you know, and I think there's less interest from me as a DMO in thinking about retainers the way we used to, right? Where it's just, okay, we're going to pay this much every month for these functions, because a lot of those functions are going to be easier for us to do. But also, I think where the focus is going to go is going to be more dynamic. It's going to flow, right? So I don't necessarily want to pay this for account management and this for creative and this for media planning, this every month, right? I don't know where it's going. You know, our relationship with our agencies, and we use a lot of agencies, is great, but they've all sort of got a finite described thing. But, you know, and some of them listen to this, and we've had conversations with them. As our budget pressure comes down, there's a good chance some of those agencies will fall out of our mix. We just won't have a choice, right? There's a chance we'll reduce or bring some of it in-house. We don't know yet, but the good agencies, the ones that are more likely to be around on the other side of that, are the ones that are trying to work with us, like you said, which is, what are the problems you're trying to solve and how can we solve it? But I do think, like, putting my agency hat on, agencies are probably going to have to rethink their structure. You
Oh,
know, I don't,
structure, model, everything.
the amount of bloat in an agency, you know, because it's kind of ironic because it was built to scale. So they have all these sort of specialists, and then they sort of add a layer of account management and account coordination. And before you know it, you've got like 20 people touching one little project, right? And that's where the bloat is. And I think we're going to have to go to more generalists. You've talked about this on the show before, and you've been doing this for over a year, and I think your team has already sort of adjusted to this. But I think it's more appealing for us to have utility players on your bench that I'm playing a fraction of, versus I'd rather have one employee that's a generalist, that's really good and trusts and knows my brand and can use the tools, than have five people that are touching that same project, you know?
I think agencies are going to look like lean teams of AI-enabled strategists as time goes on. And I mean, look, my team at one point, we had 65 people in our organization. I've got 14 people now, and nobody is, nobody's wasted bandwidth. We'll put it that way. I mean, I've had to really narrow into extremely competent, talented AI-enabled people that aren't just built to solve one problem. They can solve a variety of different problems, and that's been really helpful to our organization. I don't see how an agency will survive in the current structure that's still kind of prevalent. And it was interesting because one of the questions that I was able to answer for the group is like they're saying, "Well, with these changes, how does that affect agencies?" I'm like, well, look, you're fighting for relevance and significance. So are we, right? And what's about to happen to the agency model is a complete disruption. And if you like the agency that you work with, you're going to have to be patient with them as their entire model has to be restructured over the next 3 years. And that there's going to be some pain there. But I think if you really like who you work with, you're going to have to work through it with them because everybody's going to face massive disruption on the agency side in the next 3 years.
Yeah, I'd love to have a conversation about this with some of the big agencies in the space, you know, to have Katie or Dan to come on and just talk about what are they doing to prepare for this, you know. I know Madden, when we've had them on before, and they talked about how they sort of created these pods of teams of that can sort of function independently, but then they have a hierarchy above. And I wonder if that's changed since Dan was on the show. But, you know, Katie's one of the smartest people in the industry, you know, if not the smartest. I'm sure she's already way ahead of the curve on this. And, you know, we love our relationship with MMGY, but she knows and we know that's going to evolve over the next couple of years. We don't know quite how it's going to evolve, but, you know, she's going to be honest, and she's going to be helping us navigate it, solving problems versus protecting their interest, right? I think that's going to be the key and what we'll look for from our agency partners. Like, are we really a partner, or is this a transaction?
I think if we're doing something like that, I think we ought to have a few agencies of a few different sizes on as well, because the way Miles Madden, MMGY are going to be approaching the evolution of this is probably completely different than some of the smaller agencies. And I would probably, when I say smaller agencies, I've got 14 people. I'm talking the agencies of 50 people that are going to be fighting for where their relevance is going to be in the next coming years. I don't want just the big agency representation
Yeah,
because
that's fair.
60% of the industry can't use them anyway, right? And so I think it would be really interesting to have a good
Don't know if that's
mix.
true. I think a lot of them can cater to smaller ones too. But yeah, let's do it. Open invitation. If you're an agency, big, small, or indifferent, indifferent's not the right word. Big, small, or somewhere in the middle. Or if you're indifferent like Adam,
If you're
then
indifferent, don't reach out.
yeah, I guess you wouldn't if you're indifferent. Yeah, big or small or medium, like we'd love to reach out. Stuart.butler@visitmotorbeach.com. We'll reach out to Adam on LinkedIn. We'll put that together. I think that'll be a really fascinating one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was the other topic? You
So
talked.
the last one was get you're a CMO. Let's go from the budget conversation to what really kind of gets you excited. Like, what's the fun project you're working on? I do want to wrap the budget thing with one other really interesting thing that came out of there. There's a lot of money moving from media to content projects.
Yeah. Huh.
Multiple
If only there were
destinations
people
have that.
talking about this, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago.
Listen, I've taken a victory lap already on this episode. I don't need to do it again, but it's where it's going, and I think people are recognizing that with the algorithmic method of content delivery, paid media is no longer the only mechanism by which you can reach people outside of your normal awareness bubble, right? And so because they're recognizing that, I heard documentaries being created, I heard TV shows being created.
What a
Everybody is
novel
working,
idea. Visit
right?
Long Beach
Who
should
would do
create TV
that?
shows.
But
Huh.
it is definitely hitting. It's hitting a lot more destinations today, and I
Yeah.
love seeing that happen.
I also,
But
can we
oh, go ahead.
double click on that a little bit? Because
Yeah.
I've been thinking about this. We actually talked about it offline after the last episode a little bit, but one of the switches has gone off in my brain early in my career here. I wanted to own and control stuff. Like, I wanted, if we created content, I wanted us to create the content or pay someone to create it for us, us own it, us distribute it, us be the own, it'd be our IP. And the more I observe human behavior, the more I see how people are being inspired to travel in researching travel, the less I think that's a smart play. Because I think our owned assets are going to, and this follows up on what we talked about last week with our website. Like, I think there's a good chance our website traffic continues to decrease over time, right? And so one option would be, well, let's put more paid media lower in the funnel to drive more traffic to our website. But it doesn't really help our destination. So if we're in the stewardship and shaping of the experience business, right, we want to make sure our businesses are doing a great job. That's what Will was talking about last week with accreditations and things like that. But we increasingly want to stimulate and incubate conversations about our destination. And so our approach to social media, whereas it may have been historically, we produce content that we put on social media and then we pay money to get more visibility to that one article, right? Maybe it's more of a spray approach where we find ways to incentivize a lot of people in our destination to create content. And I'm not even talking about visitors. I'm talking about residents,
Locals,
right? And
yeah.
so turning our locals into ambassadors by, and I know you've got a product that if you want to shamelessly hawk your wares, you can in a second. You've got a product that's sort of in its beta right now that allows a DMO to put out challenges for people to create certain content, and there's a transactional piece to that. But let's say hypothetically, I could put out a request, whether it's on Adam's product or just manually do this, where I say, hey, anyone that goes and eats at a restaurant in Myrtle Beach, I want you to create a 1 minute video or less. I want you to start it with the phrase, "Hey, welcome to Myrtle Beach local favorites," and you end it with this tag, right? So you've sort of got parameters. Keep it family friendly. Keep it so you give them guidelines. But you go to any restaurant you want. You talk about the good, the bad, the indifferent, but it's got to be ultimately promotional in that we want positivity, right? You're an ambassador. And then I say, you submit these, you can publish it, you can own it, you can publish it on your own social channel. I'll pay you $50 if I choose to post it on my social channel too. And also, we'll let the business itself post it on their social channel, right? And I can scale that indefinitely, right? For $50, let's say, a turn, I can get hundreds and hundreds of new content pieces about my restaurants, about my attractions, about my businesses in my market. I don't necessarily own anything, but what's happened is now I've created conversations about these businesses. I've potentially catalyzed a stay-at-home mom or a part-time employee or even a full-time employee to now become a content creator in their own right. They can actually make a little bit of money. They may actually get to the point where they're getting enough audience that they decide to do that full time. So now I've got way more content, positive content being distributed about my destination, inspiring way more people. I don't have to own it because it's having the impact that I wanted to, which is ultimately more people are seeing information. But then the other side is I'm now collecting new knowledge and information following up on last meeting about our businesses that we can transcribe, we can use in any other way we want as well. So I think that's where I think shifting money from paid into content can actually scale and get more reach than paid content can, because distribution's always been the trick.
Yeah, and distribution has really been the thing holding people back from creating a lot more content because it's like, yeah, but we create all this. How do we get eyeballs on it, right?
Right.
But with the way the algorithms have changed on every platform, including YouTube, if the content is good enough, it should find the relevant audience. Now, that doesn't mean that every good piece of content is going to just blow up and explode. It's a volume game, right? And so I actually,
It's not just a volume game, it's a consistency. I think that's the key that most DMOs miss, right? Because they could go
Yes.
produce a ton of content and stick it out and it doesn't do a lot, but then they give up, right? And I think
Yes.
consistency is the key. You listen to any super famous podcaster, content creator, they did it for a long time, consist they put in the reps, and then
Yep.
eventually, without any real knowledge of why it happened then, they don't know, they didn't control it, they couldn't explain it. But at some point, after a certain number of reps, it pops.
Well,
And that's what we got to get used to.
I don't know if you've followed Gary Vaynerchuk
Yeah.
in a while, but you know, there's a lot of people that have opinions on him, but I tell you, all his predictions from a marketing perspective that I've seen
He's
have been
rarely
right, or at
wrong.
least 80% of them, right? And so one of the things that he said is because of the algorithmic way content is served today, the idea that every organization or individual should have one social handle is crazy. He has Gary V Flips, which is his garage sale stuff. He has, you know, Gary V Marketing, and he's like, he said today after I make this clip from my speech that I'm giving, it's going to go out on 32 different platforms that are all designed to reach different audiences, right? And so I thought that was a really interesting kind of paradigm shift from the way a lot of us are thinking. DMOs, if you think about all the different interests that, I mean, think about Myrtle Beach, right? Like you guys literally have something for almost every audience that's out there. Myrtle Beach pancakes, you know, Myrtle Beach kids activities and so on and so forth, right? Is there a world where it makes sense to do what Gary V's recommending right there and scale not only the volume of content, but also the volume of channels for delivery to maximize the exposure there? I think it's an interesting paradigm
Potentially,
shift that's
right? I
coming.
think the difference now for me, at least in my head right now, this absolutely could change is we tried this with you guys 3, 4 years ago. We created Myrtle Beach Eats. We created Myrtle Beach Beats, right? So one for food. We created one for music. There was maybe one or two others. I forget. And then we did our own Traveling the Spectrum channel. We did our own Chef
Yeah.
Swap of the Beach channel. We did our own I don't know if we did any of the podcast ones, but then we did Be Cheesy, right? So we sort of did it. We were still trying to control it. We were still owning it, and we were still trying to act like a big boy publisher. And so we were doing these high production value content on these channels. And maybe we're a little bit before our time, but I think we missed the point. Like, that's not the content people are consuming, right? The content people are consuming is peer-based information that's entertaining, educational, relevant, whatever it is. And so I think we've got to get out of our own way and say, I don't, if someone's talking about how great the food scene is in Malta Beach,
You should be amplifying that.
we should be a partner of theirs and working with them and catalyzing it. And if no one's doing it, or if only one person's doing it, we should be trying to get the second, the third, the fifth, and the 100th person to do it. Because the more chatter there is out there about how great the food scene is in Malta Beach, the when we win, we don't have to own it. Now, the problem we're going to have, though, is we always fight for this relevance or significance. And so people are going to want to try to prove that we were the reason that this happened. And I think we've got to stop worrying about that. We've got to make it so convincing and indisputable that we're providing significant value to the community, that we're not worried about these vanity metrics of how many clicks we drove and how many this we did, right? It's just, hey, the food scene in Malta Beach is popping, and we know that the catalyst and the person that's responsible for making all that stuff click was Visit Malta Beach. It's not just one thing, right? It's a myriad of stuff.
I like it.
Yeah.
Well,
Well, what else?
that product, I guess I'll just say it's
Ocuwares, go for it.
coacontent.com. Yeah,
Tickle boxes.
coacontent.com, if anybody wants to check it out, coacontent.com. And it's just basically taking the entire workflow that Stuart just described of getting locals and having them build content for you. I'm not going to go too far into it. You can get the details if you go to that website and you find it interesting. We're
You need
taking
a
beta
branding
testers
agency,
right
man.
now.
Your names are dumb. Your products. Koa, what is it? Koa what?
Coa. Content.com.
COA.
Yeah, it stands for coalition. But anyway, we don't need to thank you for your opinion on that. I really appreciate it. It's very
Yeah.
valued. Thank you.
Yeah. You like constructive feedback, like this is dumb.
Especially on air. It's really good, really helpful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I did just let you promote it for free on the show, to be fair.
Yeah, I
So.
wonder if that will be considered a promotion. But yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. No such big thing as bad publicity, as they say. But the product's cool. Just the name's dumb, to be fair. I'm doubling down. I'm not backing away.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate your feedback. I value it big time.
Yeah, I appreciate you appreciating it.
Well, I think there's a lot more we could talk about, but what I'll say is everybody should go watch it. It's going to be live probably in a few weeks. My team's going to be editing it aggressively over the next few weeks. And so I'll definitely publish on my channels. I'll announce on this show when it's live and everybody can go watch it. It'll be on the Brand Revolt YouTube channel. But the cool thing that I've recognized is I've now done this twice, right? Like CMO Jam last year, CMO Jam this year. And every time that I've done it, it's been oversubscribed with the people that want to be a part of the discussion. And then at the end, I hear every time being able to do this with my peers for a half day or a full day, depending on which one it was so valuable to me. And so we decided, based on the momentum this has gotten both times, that we're going to basically take this idea of once a year getting these CMOs together and turn it into what we're calling DMO Jam, which is a mastermind group where I'm going to be building cohorts of DMO professionals and having them be in monthly meetings together. We're going to do quarterly meetings with all of the cohorts together and even an in-person meeting every year. And I think it's going to be a really fantastic opportunity for all of us to grow together. So if you're interested, dmojam.thebrandrevolt.com. And I know you probably think that name is super stupid, Stuart, but I like it.
I actually prefer DMO
dmojam.thebrandrevolt.com.
Jam than CMO Jam. I think that's a smart move because I think these conversations are needed at every level within a DMO, not just at
Yeah,
the CMO level.
and we may do like a digital marketing cohort. We may do CEO jam. We may and so on and so forth. Like we're going to get the right people with the right groups to help everybody grow
Can I
together.
ask a favor? Can we do a sales cohort one? Group sales? That'd be good.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
Yeah,
in fact,
I think that'd be great.
I think we should. Yeah, we'll do a sales cohort.
Yeah, you could do sports cohorts. You could do like what a you know, visitor center cohorts. Like there's tons you could do. So,
Yep.
but do them right. You know, don't go scale too fast. That's the mistake a lot
No,
of folks make. You know,
well,
quality
that's the
over
thing.
quantity.
I'm not going to have 150 people in this, right? Like,
Yeah.
I'm going to moderate these discussions, and I'm not terribly scalable, and I'm only going to relinquish being the moderator if it's the right thing. And so this is an application. Like, if you go to dmojam.thebrandrevolt.com, you're applying to be a part of it. And we're going to put the right people in the right cohorts. That may mean that, like, for example, if a salesperson goes, but there's a bunch of marketing people, I'm going to say, hey, wait for the next cohort. We're going to do this slowly. We're going to do it right. And if we're all trying to help everybody grow, you can't get on and have the entire meeting be irrelevant to you. So we've got to build these cohorts the right way.
Can I also ask one other favor?
Sure. Yeah. Why not?
I don't know what, I mean, obviously you got to monetize this, right? I don't know if you're going to charge at some point or whatever, but inevitably the mistake that a lot of organizations that try to create peer groups and try to do conferences make is, and maybe it's inevitable, right? But they let the vendors come in to help fund it because the vendors are folks that have money they want to spend to reach us as DMOs. But then they need value, and so it waters down the conversation or it becomes too promotional and stuff. Right now, I think the thing that I know Diane appreciated and I've appreciated from CMO Jam and now DMO Jam is it's been DMOs having candid
Yeah.
conversations. It's not, there's no agenda, there's no one trying to hawk their wares other than Adam Stoker. And you've been pretty good at not actually promoting during these things. And so unlike this show. And so just don't jump the shark with the vendors.
I don't intend to do that until it makes sense. And the reality is, if destination marketing professionals that want to be a part of it are able to use the destination education budget to pay for this, we shouldn't need to bring vendors in. Now, it doesn't mean I won't do a vendor cohort, because I actually think vendors could learn a lot from each other by working with each other, understanding what's working with DMOs, what problems need to be solved for DMOs. I think there's a lot of value to that. I may
You're
build
going
a
to teach
vendor
them how to
cohort.
hawk their wares. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Thank you.
And to be
It's so
fair,
good
you
to have
did. I
a
did remember Tourism Economics did help fund the first one too, right? So you did
They
have
did.
them, but it was you. It wasn't promotional. So,
No, not a, and Zeke did an incredible job with that. So that's the type of tone that it will have if vendors get involved, is they're a part of the discussion because they're part of the ecosystem, but we're not pitching anything, and if we do pitch anything, they're not going to be in the cohort for very long.
Well, I promise you this, Adam. If you do jump the shark with that, I will be glad to let you know on air.
I believe you. I absolutely believe you.
Oh, man. Adam, they want to find out more about you. Thank you for bringing this topic, by the way. It's fascinating. I didn't know where we were going with this conversation because I hadn't heard anything about this CMO Jam. So it was a thoroughly enjoyable conversation. Thanks. Where can they find you?
Thank you, Stuart. CMO Jam has been one of the most rewarding things I've ever been a part of, and it's been really cool. You can find me, Adam, at thebrandrevolt.com. Find me on LinkedIn, or of course on Tourism IQ.
And you can find me at stuart.butler at visitmontalbeach.com. If you're an agency, you want to come on a future episode,
Let's
love to
do
hear
it.
from you for sure. I mean, we're going to have to limit the number, you know, but so first come, first serve sort of thing. But please leave a review, subscribe, all that fun stuff. Share it with a friend, most importantly. That's how we move the industry forward together is by having these conversations and sharing it. And if you have a topic you want to come on the show, we'd love to have you. Adam, I'm going to give you some homework. I think out of the cohort that you just had with CMO Jam, only one of those is being a destie on the show. So let's go get them all to go get their hot topics and have them come on. They're all invited. So, all
Yep, I'll invite all of them.
right.
They'll be
Thank you
great.
guys. Until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
Thanks, everybody. I'm recording.